Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. I am Mark Cook, along with Trevor Sikkema.
Hello.
And longtime publisher of Pewter Report, Mr. Scott Reynolds. Hi, Scott.
How are you doing?
Scott's got a bit of a cold. Sounds a little different today, doesn't he?
Sounds a little like a high schooler.
Yeah, ninth grader. Are you in ninth grade?
Yes, sir.
He just said, yes, sir, I like this kid already. By the way, that is actually not Scott Reynolds. He has not regressed to age 14. That is our good friend, Mr. Riley Aumann, I would like to say, of the Tampa Bay Times, but not quite.
Although, that's true.
He does do some work with the Tampa Bay Times. In fact, this guy was up in Mobile getting more scoop than you were, Trevor.
Wow.
I saw him up at the bars.
Getting called out at the Battleship.
At 2 a.m., hanging out with NFL GMs and coaches.
That wasn't
drinking
happening.
Drinking
beers. Wow. No.
Was that not you,
no.
Riley? By the way, I wasn't even there either. So I have no idea if that was him or not. But it wouldn't surprise me. He looks like he could probably pass. Do you have a fake ID yet, Riley?
I have a fake school ID.
Cool. Well, me and Trevor can hook you up with one of those. No problem. We'll get you in some of the South Tampa establishments that Trevor haunts.
I would never.
No, we wouldn't do that. Greg Aumann would kill us. Not Greg Aumann. He's dead from the Aumann brothers, Greg Aumann.
All right. Can we just get to the Bucks talk?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Dead music
I'm sorry,
people.
Because we'll get comments from people about how they... I listened for 30 seconds and I had to click out.
I've already clicked out.
I clicked out before we started. I don't even want to be here. It's Friday, late.
That's true.
It's like 5 o'clock.
But
what are we doing?
We had a couple people literally reach out to us on Twitter and be like, hey, when's new podcast, which is really cool.
Yeah.
We love you guys for listening.
We get frustrated occasionally with some of the bashing, but... In all honesty, I mean, 90% of the feedback we get is positive, so that's good. So, anyway, for the haters, we're just going to keep rambling
Speaking
for a couple
haters,
more minutes to piss you off.
There were some haters on Jason Light until about 2 days ago.
Let's be honest, Trevor. I was thinking about this. You and I were a little frustrated early
on. Yeah, no, I write that in my cover three. The first thing that I open with in my cover three is, I was one of the people that criticized it.
Yeah.
They should have probably gotten Michael Bennett, and they probably should have gotten Robert Quinn, but, you know.
But let me ask you this.
A little bit of luck, a little bit of timing.
Now that you know that they've signed Jason Pierre-Paul,
yes.
Which of the three would you rather have?
Jason Pierre-Paul.
Yeah.
I think Michael Bennett probably just like on field. I'd rather have Michael Bennett. But there's a lot that comes with Michael Bennett.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, like even like today, right? There's a warrant out for his arrest for assaulting an elderly woman at the Super Bowl to get on the field.
It happens.
And so, like, it's just Michael Bennett always has a lot around him.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff I don't care about, but it still is baggage for Bennett.
And it's a distraction to the team. I mean, you can go back to when he left
and
here,
why
and there was
Bennett
an issue.
Bennett got dealt
with,
for a fifth.
Right.
JPP got dealt for a third.
Right.
Right.
And a swap of fours. So anyway,
how do you feel about it, Riley? The JPP.
I think the JPP trade is a good move, especially since they can get out after this year.
Right,
but,
that's key.
I think especially with some of the price that the other pass rushers have come at, while like JPP is a third rounder, I think I would, like you said, definitely take him over a Robert Quinn, who's been on the decline for a couple of years now, and over a Michael Bennett with some of the baggage that comes with him.
You know, and the thing is, Trevor and I brought this up a couple weeks ago to Scott when we were kind of debating on whether the Bucks should have signed Quinn or Bennett when they didn't. Find me a third-round defensive end who's going to come in and get 8.5 sacks.
Sure. Well, you can't.
You're not going to.
You can't find a pass rusher in the third round basically at all anyways.
I mean, this is not a great draft for, you know, 4-3 defensive ends. And so, you know, the odds of you finding a diamond in the rough in the third round, and it would be a huge diamond in the rough for a guy in the third round that can get 8.5 sacks. Now, we're basing that on the fact that he can still go and get 8.5 sacks because he – was second in the league last year in snaps played on the defense. I mean, he took a lot of abuse last year.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he didn't show any ill effects, played the whole season. He talked a little bit today about, you know, his coming back from that hand injury, which, you know, has been talked about, you know, way too much probably. Again, he's not missing his entire hand or his arm. I mean, he's missing part of a finger and a thumb or something like that, right?
Get jammed in a face mask, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean...
probably likes maybe less broken fingers in a face mask.
And he wraps it, so he's actually...
Does he go full club on it?
Yeah, I think he's got... It's like a weapon, you know? I mean, he's like, you know, a little extra weapon there. You know, I kind of like it. I mean, I'm not going to take off my fingers to be a better pass rusher, and I'm sure he would much rather have.
Well, I mean, you're not a
hand.
Pass rusher. You're a typist.
I'm a nose tackle.
If you took off your fingers, if you told Scott you were going to take off your fingers to become a better pass rusher, Scott would probably be like, okay, well, now you can't type, so you're fired.
That's a good point. Although, have you ever seen me type? I only type with two fingers anyway.
So do I.
So I'm
don't
good.
Don't tell anybody, but so do I. And, Riley, do you type with all your...
Nah, I type with two fingers.
Heck yeah. All right. We're good. People are listening to this podcast.
We're the henpeckers.
How are you going to beat Jude Ajiburima in a fight if you only have 8.5 fingers?
Well, I think he could be better against
because he'd have the club.
Well, right? First of all, if I'm fighting Jude Ajiburima, he's just going to hold me anyway like he did the Raiders receiver
you
in that game.
Every time.
And so I'm not really fearing any major moves. He's just going to hold me and commit a penalty. So he'll probably be penalized in the fight and get points deducted. I'll win based on points just because he'll probably cheat.
All right, Riley's got to get out of here soon. So, Riley, like, quick, what you thought about the Bucks' free agency moves, like what was your favorite one, and just like how you think they did overall?
I think adding Bo Allen to the defense at nose tackle is going to be a really good addition. I think with the lack of productivity they had from that spot last year with like Chris Baker,
right.
I think being able to add him, especially with his elite Twitter game, I think that's going to be a major upgrade to that spot.
Already a big fan of that myself.
Yes, shout out at the office already, the other day. He's already my favorite Buck.
Okay, I know you're a big office guy.
What about...
Did you listen to the video of how to pronounce it?
Yeah. How do you pronounce it?
I don't know.
I still can't figure it out. How do you pronounce it, Riley? You know.
I thought it was Unrein, but I don't know how to say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was Unrein.
Yeah, I'm just going to call him Urin.
Wow.
No?
That's a little
not offensive. To his face. No? He's a big man. I won't do that. But anyway, okay, there's another addition to the defensive line. This defensive line looks completely different than it did in the season, and that was what was needed. Now, is it an upgrade? We'll find out, you know, a couple games into the season how much better this defensive line is. I think I might have said offensive line, but defensive line. So your thoughts on the entire upgrade of the defensive line so far, Riley?
I think there was a take I saw on Twitter earlier today that said that they might be the best defensive line in football, which I think is putting expectations a bit too high right
Must
now.
Must be two footballs.
I think this person might have said the best defensive line the Bucks have had in the last, you know, 5 years,
sure.
Maybe. But
sure.
Yeah, I don't think
outside
that's
of that take
anywhere near the best.
Which
in football.
A little bit more realistic.
But I think, especially, I think they'll be the most improved defensive line in football next year.
I agree.
That having
that's fair.
I mean, especially when you're putting $22 million into two new starters at defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to see a lot of improvement there. I think I said this after I heard Brenton Buckner do his introductory press conference, but I really think that he'll probably be a coordinator within a year or two.
Yeah.
And I think the Bucs will get their first 10 sack guy. Since whoever knows when Simeon
with,
Rice.
You mean like under him?
Yeah,
under
with him
right.
As the defensive line coach
yeah.
/ defensive coordinator.
I actually tweeted that Brenton Buckner could be a defensive coordinator like, I don't know, 8 games into the season next year. Here in Tampa.
Sounds like they do it.
No, I don't think they'll fire Mike Smith in the middle of the year, but anyway.
All right, that was good.
All right, Riley's got to get out of here. His father, Greg Allman, has a concert tonight. Who are you guys playing with? Are y'all the Fox Theater in Molly Hatchet? Fox Theater in Atlanta. They're getting ready to get on a private jet. Anyway, Ramblin' Man, what are you going to open the show with?
Yeah, Ramblin' Man, there you go.
All right, that's a Dickie Betts song anyway, but all right. Very good. Riley, we appreciate you joining us for the brief time. We would have gotten in here sooner and had Riley more often, I mean, more on the podcast, but they were using this room for the NFL Network for JPP.
Yeah. Who's more important, Riley Allman on a podcast or JPP for NFL Network?
Apparently,
you know, like
apparently we didn't
I
let him know.
I think they made the wrong decision.
Apparently, we didn't let him know Riley was part of the equation or they would cancel the JPP.
Next time.
So anyway, all right, Riley, appreciate it,
Thank
my
you,
friend.
Riley.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We're going to be doing our big draft deal like we did last year, so we're going to be counting on you to join in for some commentary like you did last year, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, I enjoyed coming in. I think it was day 3 last year and sitting there for a couple hours.
Might sneak in day 2 this year. You never know. Might upgrade.
That's a Friday night.
Can we kick it Scott out already?
No, me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't do that. I'm not.
You're subbing yourself out. You're tapping the
yeah,
helmet.
Yeah, I'm tapping the
what
helmet.
We outside
I'm
of
Mike
the first
Evans.
32 guys? All right, get me out of here.
I'm Mac Evans, 4 plays into the game, tapping the helmet. Just kidding, Mike. All right, appreciate it, Riley.
Thanks
so much, bud. All right, Trevor, so we asked Riley's opinion of this. Again, you and I weren't the most patient guys early on in the whole free agency process. And Jason said, you know, I don't want to use the word subliminally, but we read through the tea leaves in our conversations with the organization mm-hmm. to be patient. Mm-hmm. There were still things to come with this team. Now, Jason made a good point today, though. you know, it was a bit of a gamble to wait because he had these discussions on JPP back at the combine, but he did not know it was going to happen literally until it happened.
See, and that's the thing. Like, we're trying to, like, we're trying to stay level-headed about this, like, the whole time. But if luck isn't a little bit on their side, this doesn't happen.
Right.
And all of a sudden they go into the draft. Let's say Bradley Chubb's gone. And, like, I like Vinnie Curry. I did the Vinnie Curry breakdown on the cover three. But, I mean, Vinnie Curry's never really been a sack guy. I think he's better than his stats. But you know what I'm saying here.
Sure.
It was, like I said, in the cover three. You've got to have – and I think Jason led to this a little bit in his press conference. They had a plan. And the important thing is that you have to have a plan because when the timing lines up, You've got to have already put yourself in a position to make the jump, to make the trade, to make the decision. And that doesn't happen unless you have a plan. And so I think this offseason was one of the times that it really worked for him. And I think that it could have been bad. Like, I mean, let's say the Eagles don't deal for
Curry.
Bennett.
Oh, for Bennett, yeah. You're right. Then they're keeping Curry.
Then they're keeping Curry.
Sure.
They might, I mean, like, because they had a couple of linebackers, like Nigel Bradham, Michael Kendricks, and Vinnie Curry were those guys that you weren't sure who they might move on from, this or that. And so, sure, could the Bucs have maybe gotten a different one of those guys? Maybe. But again, that's just this giant, there's 31 other teams in the NFL that, I mean, 30 in this case because it's two teams out. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think that kind of goes into it, that there was a plan, but there was a little bit of luck involved. You know, a week ago, we were still sitting here looking at this same old defense that finished last in the league last year. So,
22 sacks is not going to get it done. Now, again, the year before, I think they had like 36 or 38 sacks. And
38,
They still missed the playoffs. So, you know, those sack numbers, it's not just the sacks. It's a culmination of you know, all 22 guys improving. And that's what they hope. But, again, now, something that I've seen on Twitter a lot is, okay, now the JPP signing and the trade for Curry means they could pass on Chubb if they wanted to. They ain't passing on Chubb.
I wouldn't.
No.
I mean, think about it. Vinnie Curry, JPP, Noah Spence, Bradley Chubb.
Right. Because, again, Bradley Chubb is not probably going to come in as a rookie and get 8.5 sacks.
Yeah.
You know, he's probably not. That's just the bottom line. I mean, again, I keep bringing it up, but Joey Bosa had 9.5 a couple years ago. But it's that second, third year when these guys blossom. The slips my mind. The Clemson kid from Atlanta. First year,
Vic
awful.
Beasley.
Vic Beasley, awful. Yeah, yeah. Second year has like 16.5 sacks. Last year wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But you know, it doesn't happen very often that you're an impact guy as a rookie.
Ian
Beckles
was saying
that
to me when I was on his pass rush. He's like, you can't count on rookies.
Right.
Like, if they play for you and they ball out, great. But you got to draft them basically being like, this year, we're not coping that you're going to do anything.
Yeah.
We can't. It'd be unfair to them.
Now, let's go into the draft a little bit, which is just we're right at 1 month away from the NFL draft, a month and a couple days. But we're probably thinking Chubb may be gone. But, again, nobody thought O.J. Howard was going to fall to 19 last year, too. So you just don't know what happens when quarterback-hungry teams start trading up, and that throws everything off on all of these mocks. But if you take Chubb out of the equation and you take Quentin Nelson out of the equation, because I think both of those two players, the Buccaneers, would jump on at number 7 if either one of them were there. But say they're both gone. Now you're at, again, I'm speculating that those are their top two guys. Who's number 3 if you're Jason Light?
So are you asking me, like, me personally, or what I think the Bucs are going to do?
Both. What you think the Bucs might do, and then what would you do if you were Jason Light?
I think the Bucs would probably either take Derwin James or trade back. Not too far, because I still think that they would want, like, Vita Vea.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I think that might be an option for them.
I'm telling you, Barkley is not out of the equation either with this team. People say there's no way they're going to take it. But I'm talking to enough people. Barkley's they love Barkley. You know, you were up at the combine.
Yeah, they did. No, they interviewed him, and Barkley was one of the guys that obviously killed the interview process, and we knew that he would. I don't know how much they're weighing this, but, like, I like Harold Landry a lot from Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
And he was – I think he led the nation in tackles for loss and sacks in 2016.
Right.
And then this year, he was hurt all year. And so he goes to the combine and he basically, the numbers that he put up, you kind of validifies it like, hey, 2016 was the real me. I was hurt last year.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, I mean, Harold Landry is just as much the pass rusher that Bradley Chubb is.
You think?
Just might be a more complete,
I see what you're saying.
Three down lineman kind of a thing. Yeah. But I mean, if we're talking just, you know, pass rusher,
Landry that nasty, have that edge, you know, spit on the logo of the Seminoles type feel?
I mean, that's a Bradley Chubb thing that you would, why you would want that guy.
Right.
But I mean, you know, like, you know, Von Miller is not a spit on the field guy. Obviously, he's elite. You know, you get all kinds of speed pass rushers.
Leroy Selman wasn't a spit on the field guy. I mean, number one, he held you on an airplane. That was one of the greatest stories I ever heard, by the way.
That's true. Anybody who's never heard that, I should know what number podcast.
Yeah, you need to find that out. Figure it out and put it in the comment section for some of our late Pewter Nation joiners who might have missed
people
the early
podcast.
People want
to know how I have my sixth sense for Bucks things.
Yes.
Leroy Selman held
Rocked
me in his arm
to sleep
when
on
I
an
was
airplane.
An infant. You know?
That's a true story. Oh, well, allegedly it's a true story, but we're not going to put Trevor on a lie detector. All right. So you're speculating what the Buccaneers do. Now, all of a sudden, your name's Jason Light. Okay. Number seven comes up. Chubb's gone. Nelson's gone. You got to make the pick.
I think it's one of three players.
No, you have to make the pick.
Oh, man.
Right now, who's your pick? You're turning the card in. Time's ticking down. You don't want to miss out like the Minnesota Vikings did a few years ago. Was it the Vikings who forgot to get, or didn't get their pick in time? I don't know. But anyway, go ahead.
It'd probably be Derwin.
Derwin.
Yeah.
Coming from a Gator.
It'd probably be Derwin.
You know, I'll say
Derwin
this.
Just affects the middle of the field so much, and that's such a big deal.
And
playing that strong safety / linebacker / edge presence role. I mean, we saw from the Eagles last year, it's not just, yes, you need to be able to generate pressure with your front four, but when you can get creative and aggressive – the way that, like, Schwartz did, man, like, that's you're winning football games. You know, that's just how it happens.
But is Mike Smith that guy? Because we didn't see a lot of that last year.
I don't know. But, I can't – and I said this a little bit in the cover three. I can't pick players and see talent and go, well, what if the coaches don't use them correctly?
I know
what I'm saying?
I agree.
Like, if this team doesn't coach well, none of it matters.
Yeah, you're right.
None of this matters. So – You're right. Mike Smith has to be so much more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mike Smith, and we saw from the lack of production from the linebackers last year, like especially sacks, you know, Levante and Kwan getting
no sacks.
That's
yeah.
ridiculous.
Yep.
It should never happen.
Right.
And I think the reason for it is because Mike Smith got scared a lot. You know, the defensive line wasn't holding up their end of the bargain. They couldn't stay with four. And then the coverage gets blah, 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 blah. So,
plus, I'll say this. When they did,
I don't know.
And they did blitz Levante and Kwan some last year. But when you saw them blitz, you saw the defensive line doing some crazy stuff too. You know what I mean? I mean, it was just a mess.
Just go after
it
him,
wasn't
man.
Clean. That's the only word I can use to describe it. Watching from the press box, you know, you would see, okay, they're going to blitz here. It looks like they're going to blitz here. Either it would be a missed time blitz, or they'd be running some kind of crazy stunt. You got two guys running at each other, or you got two guys clogging up a hole where the guy's blitzing through there. You know, maybe with the addition of these defensive linemen the Buccaneers have added, four new guys, hoping Spence is healthy, essentially five guys on this defensive line in a rotation that weren't here last year, maybe doesn't have to be that creative. Maybe you've got enough talent now to where you can play, you know, a simple base D and be semi-effective because this offense, you know, You don't want to take too many chances, in my opinion, with this offense, because I believe you've got an offense that is going to be prolific this year if they add an impact running back, and they've got to do that in the second round, if not the first round, but definitely in the second round. You get an impact running back, and this offensive line stays fairly healthy, and Jameis's shoulder stays good. They're going to set franchise records this year. I mean, I'm totally drinking the Kool-Aid this year as Jameis goes into his fourth year. And so, again, if you know that you're going to be able to put up 25, 26 points a game, you know, do you get too crazy and too exotic at that point now that you've added some additional talent? That's another caveat, I guess, to the whole situation.
Yeah, not only the bodies that you've added that are the new bodies that you could throw out of pocket, but I think the ability to win one-on-one is a big deal. And I think that was a big problem that they kind of ran into last year. And I don't know how much of this was Jay Hayes' just idea, or maybe Jay Hayes just saw this and was like, uh-oh. But they did all those kinds of stunts and games and blitz, like mm-hmm. for blitzes. And the reason why you do that is because you obviously want to affect the chemistry of the offensive line.
Right.
Well, I think logically, the reason why you would do that is because when you're just rushing straight at them, you can't win your one-on-ones.
Sure.
So that makes you think, okay, now I've got to disrupt the chemistry somehow. Right. Now, you know, not only are these newer players that they've got in, but like, I think they did this because JPP can win one-on-ones.
Right.
Vinny Curry can win one-on-ones. Bo Allen can take up two blocks. Jerome McCoy can win one-on-ones. Yep. You know, and all of a sudden there, you've got the four that you kind of would mm-hmm. want to win individually, so maybe you don't have to do all those stunts and games. So then, yep. you know, the extra pressure you bring is actually extra pressure and not just like evening out things, you know? So I think that'll, I think it's at least going to be better.
Yeah, something I've noticed on Twitter, the debate between James and Fitzpatrick. And again, you're the draft guru. You and Scott spent a lot more time watching the tape. You know, I watched Alabama play several games last year because they were always on television. Obviously, sure. I watched all the Seminole games. You know, when you look at the stats, James had a little bit better stats last year. Not by a lot, but a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And Fitzpatrick does show some versatility, particularly in the slot. But I don't think this team views him as a guy that can line up on the outside, too, the way that I believe that they think James could potentially at times.
Yeah, I think that they just think they believe in a lot more of James's athletic ability, which I don't blame them for.
Right.
I just think that Fitzpatrick is just – I think he's such a natural defensive back. That's a really good word for Fitzpatrick because he can't –
And he can be a great safety.
Yeah, he can play safety. He can play nickel. He can play outside. But, you know, if you don't think that Minkah Fitzpatrick's going to be an outside cornerback, then you're not really drafting him in the top 10.
Right.
I think Derwin's a guy who you could play at strong safety. You can match man coverage on tight ends.
Yep.
He's got the length. He's got the strength to do that. You can use him as an edge rusher. I just think that, you know, overall athletic ability gives Derwin that little nod over Minkah Fitzpatrick because I do think they're both really good prospects, but there's no denying Derwin's the better athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Derwin is too taller, longer. So he's the better athlete at a bigger size. So, I mean, that's there you go. That's your trump card.
And then you throw in my opinion, and Scott wrote about this in his Fab Five when he made a case for Derwin. And by the way, before we get into that, let me just bring this up. Had a guy hammer me pretty good on Twitter about how we love to flip-flop and how we love to, oh, you're on the bandwagon for this guy this week and you're on the bandwagon for this guy the next week. Well, number one, find me a mock draft that's consistent from January to April. Things change. Why do they change? Because we get new information.
Right, right.
We don't care technically who this team picks because it's not our job.
We're just trying
to make personnel decisions.
Educate the people.
Again, I want people to understand when we go and feature and focus a player, sometimes it is just, hey, let's look at the other side of it. You know what I mean? Let's compare the two, all right? Maybe this guy makes a little bit more sense. But in the majority of the cases, Trevor, it's Scott getting information. It's me getting information at the FSU Pro Day. It's you getting information at the Florida Pro Day. Scott getting information, you know, with his conversations with people in the league. Because we do that. I'm telling you, man, if anybody stole our phones, there would be so much off-the-record stuff, they wouldn't believe it. I mean, there really is. And people like to say, well, you don't know what Jason Light's going to do. You're right. You know what? Jason Light doesn't know what he's going to do a month from now because things are going to change. It always does. But we are in tune. Doesn't mean we know because you're right. Jason Light is never going to text Scott Reynolds and say, I'm taking this guy. And that's never going to happen. Scott Reynolds and Mark Dominic were very close. And yet Mark Dominic never called Scott Reynolds and said, hey, this
right.
is who we're going to draft.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. I mean, they're all going to play some charades. And you know what? Some of these general managers and some of these front office people and some of these scouts we talk to absolutely try and throw us off the trail. I understand that. I would do the same thing, too. I mean, particularly if you're considering taking a guy that maybe other teams don't value as high as a number seven guy. You don't want to really let a team know that might be your guy. So you're never going to spill the beans completely. But again, a lot of our what people might call flip-flopping comes from new information, you know, every day. I felt more comfortable with Derwin James going at number 7 before the pro day than after the pro day. And if people will read my story about Jason Light wanting, in parentheses, competitors, take it for what you want. I mean, I'm telling you, Jason Light seemed extremely disappointed that Derwin James didn't do mini drills at all on Tuesday up in Tallahassee. Now, will that affect if he drafts the guy or not? Probably not. But it's in the back of his mind a little bit too. And if he's got a guy ranked 1A and 1B, or both of them ranked 1As, you know, maybe that does affect things a little bit. So, again, it doesn't mean we certainly don't know. I don't know that this front office really knows. They've got five or six guys that they would consider taking at 7. They're also looking at scenarios of trading up. They're looking at scenarios of trading back. I wrote this in the mailbag the other day. You know, you can question Jason Light's free agent signings. You know, he's had some bad ones, and he's had some decent ones, and we'll see what this class does. Draft-wise, too, I think he's had more hits than misses on the draft there. I would say he certainly has fared better as a draft guy mm-hmm. than a free agent guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just so many things that go into it. And I forgot where I was going to go with that when I started rambling on about it. It was in the mailbag. It was about, let me think about this for a second. It was Jason Light talking about...
I can't even tell you the answer because I don't know the answer.
Yeah, because you didn't read the mailbag.
No, but like people...
I spelled it out in the mailbag a little bit more. Oh, I'll tell you what it is.
Okay.
Say what you want about drafting. Say what you want about that. I will say this with 100% confidence. I don't know. I haven't been around a general manager or talk to people who have said the same thing about a general manager, more about Jason Light as far as the one thing you can count on is him being prepared for all the different scenarios. He will not be caught flat-footed because this team starts evaluating guys for next year. Already some of that stuff is going on. And Jason Light likes to be a hands-on guy as far as watching film and those kind of things go. So he's not just counting on his staff to do it and bring him, okay, hey, listen, we found this guy, watch some tape on it. They do that, but chances are Jason Light's already seen that tape because that's what he likes to do.
Yeah. No, a lot of times when I have little chit-chats, conversations with Jason Light, and, you know, like even if it's prospects that I'm just getting around to, blah, 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 like, He knows yeah. a lot. Even when we talk at the Senior Bowl, especially, it's one where we kind of get to catch up with him a little bit, talk to him, you know, a little bit about prospects.
Have you ever said, hey, what about player A? And he's like, oh, you know, I haven't seen any of him.
No, absolutely.
That's never
not.
Happened.
No, because, I mean, by the time that we get to talk to him after the season, right. You know, his scouts and everything, they've got – and Jason loves the draft. I mean, Jason's a former director of college scouting,
sure.
right? Or player personnel or whatever right. it was. Whatever.
Self-described meathead, he called himself.
Scout head. To that person's comment, like, there's always going to be flip-flopping. Like, mm-hmm. this is how it goes. Like, we learn new information. We have new prospects that come on the radar. And, like, yeah, sure, it's like, oh, well, you guys just, you're catching up to what they think. Well, duh. We're spending the next
right.
3 months trying to put the puzzle together.
Right,
this is
right.
how it goes.
Right, right. And I'll tell you.
We do the draft because... The draft, I mean, like, yes, in April and May when we put out mock drafts, we want to be giving you information that we think is going to be right on draft night. But information in January and February and even March,
mm-hmm.
it's to bring stuff to the forefront of, hey, you know, what if the Bucks picked it?
Right.
And a lot of it, yes, we've heard that they might like this guy or that guy, but... It's like the whole draft process is about like, hey, you know, what if the Bucks did prioritize edge rusher at number 7? Here's how the rest of it could look like. What if they prioritized Quentin Nelson at 7?
And Trevor, look at it like this. I mean, if they don't bring in Ryan Jensen, then all of a sudden getting Nelson becomes even more imperative.
Correct.
If they don't bring
That's
in Bo Allen, then Vita Vea is a and he still could be the number 7 pick, but it's even more of a possibility.
It's about allowing you to pick the best player on the mm-hmm. board whenever you come on the clock.
Right.
Whether it's at 7 or 15 or 32 or 56 or 109, you want to already have the roster
right.
in place for the most part.
Right.
To be able to better your team as best as a draft class can let you do it.
Yep.
That's the whole point of the draft.
Yep. All right. Well,
JPP does that very nicely for them now.
No, I completely agree. And you know, Bo Allen helps. Again, it's you know, you things change based on what you're able to accomplish in free agency, and therefore your mock drafts and projections and things like that. And it's also our job to present as many possibilities as possible to the fans. You know, how many people knew about Vea prior to February, I guess, is when Scott really got hot on him after being up in the Senior Bowl in late January and talking to Jimmy Lake, the defensive coach for Washington, and things like that. And so, you know, it does change things from January. Rarely does it I think we had Jameis Winston in our first mock draft in January of 2015, and it never changed.
Right.
We had him in there the entire time.
You know that one. That's an easy one.
You know, and that is one that you know, we knew Jason Light was hot on him the October prior to when he went to two games. He went to Louisville, he went to NC State. And he was in love with Jameis Winston, you know, early that year.
The first game we saw him on national television, he threw four touchdowns against Pitt.
Even the year before,
you know,
completed. You know, I think he had two incompletions in that game, and one.
I remember watching that game.
Yeah, I'll tell you this.
And I was at Florida at the time, and I went, uh-oh. Oh no.
You know, I'll say this: the 2012 season was a tough year for Noles fans because the Gators came up to Doak Campbell and put a smackdown on EJ Manuel, and you know, he ended
that
up fumbling. It was it should
that's
have
all
been
I
a,
got.
Should have been
that's
a,
all I got right now.
Should have
that's
been
all I got.
I know, because it would be 7 years
just
in a row.
Just Matt Elam doing the
it would be
snow
seven,
the
you realize
snowman
it would be
the,
seven in a row if they'd have won that game, because it's 6 out of 7 I think is the record right now, because it's
they win the
five.
Year before
I don't remember, but anyway, the point is you know, that you're going back to watching Jameis that first game. I'll say this. That was such a year that I thought Florida State had a chance to go to the national championship. And had they beaten the Gators, I think they would have played, because they only had one loss. That was the NC State Mike Lennon loss, which I just still don't believe actually happened. Again, you let your fifth-year senior quarterback throw 5 passes in the second half. Way to go, Jimbo. But that was the night that I tweeted Jimbo Fisher is the worst coach in college football, and people like to bring that up, particularly after they won a national championship. They saved that tweet. But again, the whole point of me rambling on about this is I remember that first game against Pittsburgh, too, in 2013. I was looking at that year as, oh, it's a rebuilding year, because they lost a lot of talent. They lost their fifth-year starter, and you're going into the year with a new quarterback, and redshirt freshman quarterbacks don't win national championships, and I was completely wrong. But I was just like you, watching that game on Monday night, thinking, wow, where did this guy come from?
Yep.
And by the way, the rumor is true. Jameis Winston did go to Jimbo Fisher after that NC State game and say, put me in. We won't lose another game.
I thought we already knew that.
Yeah,
right?
Probably, but I can't remember if I told that story. I probably told it 3 or 4 times. But I remember asking Jameis about it in the locker room, and he just started laughing. He would not confirm it, but I've had other people that would confirm it, that Jameis went in there. And you know what? He's probably right. They probably do beat the Gators. They probably do have another national championship if Jameis would have played. But Jimbo did not like to play true freshman. He had to last year.
True freshman.
He had to last year.
It all worked out for him.
I don't know. Yeah, it did. Worked out for everybody.
Worked out for
so
me.
Far. That game.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So it's a 2-man show. We had Riley to start the show with, so we don't have as much to talk about, because, you know, let's be honest, we're going to cut this a little shorter than normal, because when Scott gets on here, he tends to ramble a little bit, so he can easily fill
30 minutes. You know, 30, 40 minutes. What should we normally do?
He can usually fill in 15 minutes all by himself, so he probably won't listen to this podcast so we can talk crap about him, but... anyway, by the way, Scott wasn't able to make it tonight for the podcast, but he'll be back next week. What we're doing next week is we're heading over to Orlando for the NFL owners meetings, and we will be speaking to Jason Light, it looks like, on Tuesday.
Yep.
Also, the Glazers, one of the Glazers, probably Joel, who it normally is, does some sit-down one-on-ones with the local media, so we'll probably let Scott handle that. Since he's the veteran of the group on Tuesday. But looking forward to that in Orlando. It's always a good time. A lot of good information. You know, every coach, every GM, every owner is there. You've got media guys from all over the country, so we should be able to pull up some really good good content stuff.
Yeah, start paying a lot closer attention if you're not already to the stuff that we're saying after the owners' meetings. That's
exactly.
All I'm saying. That's all we're saying.
You can't see us wink and nod, but we're doing a lot of winking and
nodding. Start paying more attention.
That's right. All right. We appreciate everybody listening. Just one more quick thing. If you did not join our bowling league, you can still do so this Monday night. Trevor and I won't be here this Monday night because we'll be in Orlando. The good thing about this bowling league that we do at Pin Chasers on Monday night is if you're unable to make it for one of the nights, you can bowl anytime. You can make up those scores. So, you know, but if you haven't joined, you can still join into the second week, which will be this Monday. You can contact Ethan at Pin Chasers at the Armenia location. He will sign your team up. Even if you don't have a full three-man team, if you just got one or two, we will put you together with somebody and you will have a team. I went last Monday night and bowled extremely poorly. I only broke 100 once. It was very, very embarrassing. But you know what? I still had a great time because the pizza is good. They have very underrated pizza, Trevor, at Pin Chasers. And I'm not a big pizza guy.
I don't.
But I like their pizza.
Look, man.
And I like their beer.
I feel like I've had decently good pizza at most bowling alleys I've been to. And it really weirds me out.
Yeah. There's something about bowling alley
food. I don't get it.
You don't know what a drive-in theater is.
Pizza shouldn't be good in a bowling alley.
I know.
But Pin Chasers is good.
I'll tell you this. And you've had them because I think I've shared them with you.
No, you haven't.
Did I even give you any of their chicken wings?
Nope.
Their chicken wings, I don't even think are on the menu. Maybe they are now. But
secret menu.
They're really, yeah, they have a secret menu. Yes. Their chicken wings are great.
Okay, I'm starving. Can we end this podcast?
Yeah, we're going to end this podcast. So anyway, check it out. Go to Pin Chasers. Call Ethan. Sign up for the Pewter Report Bowling League. It's $13 a week for 10 weeks. But guess what? The end of the bowling thing. You get a free bowling ball worth $100, and then it's custom drilled. So all of the money you spend, you're getting right back in your own. But you can even get your name engraved in it. I've got my name engraved. It just
can I get my Twitter handle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tampa Bay Trey.
Yeah, there you go.
That's
now
right.
Now I'll do it.
I'm going to do at Mark Cook 1970, birthday 10/20. Now, I give away way too much information. It's a wonder my identity hasn't been stolen. It probably has.
Nobody wants to steal your identity.
That's true.
Who wants to be you?
They're only going
to
improve.
Who wants to be an infant cat dad on the internet?
They can only improve my credit, actually.
They can only improve my credit.
I couldn't make it any worse. Hell, I'll give you my social if you want. Anyway, appreciate everybody listening to this edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. For Trevor Sikkema, I'm Mark Cook. Scott Reynolds will be back next week, allegedly. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast.